Hello, and welcome to Practical Significance, a podcast to inspire listeners with compelling stories from statistics and data science and to propel data-driven careers forward. Here are your hosts, the ASA's Associate Executive Director, Donna Lalonde, and Executive Director, Ron Wasserstein.
Well, welcome, everyone. We're excited to be back again on another episode of Practical Significance. And I'm really appreciative that three of my colleagues from the Committee on International Relations and Statistics are joining us to talk about a very important program, and that is the Educational Ambassadors Program. And so we have some traditions, and one of the traditions is to start by asking our guests to introduce themselves and tell us a little bit about their day job. So, Carolina, I'll start with you.
Thank you so much, Donna. I'm really excited to be here. So I'm a principal statistician at NORC at the University of Chicago, which is a nonpartisan research organization that provides research and consulting services across many sectors. And in my role, I lead statistical methodology efforts for projects in social sciences and public health, bringing expertise in statistical modeling. And beyond my work at NORC, I'm also active in the service to the profession, including things like this, serving in the Committee of Educational Relations in Statistics.
Thank you very much. And thank you for all of the service to the committee. And we are grateful. Andreas, I'll go to you.
I'm Andrei Kosinski. Thank you for organizing this podcast. It's exciting. I have been a member of a committee on international relations in statistics now for several years. And this year, I will finish serving as the chair of this committee. I am a professor of biostatistics in the Department of Biostatistics and Bioinformatics at the Duke University Medical School in Durham, North Carolina. I'm also affiliated with DCRI, which is a Duke Clinical Research Institute, where lots of clinical research happens. I used to teach and advise students in the past, but now I mainly focus on collaborative research. And I have two examples: PI, principal investigator of a data coordinating center for a clinical trial funded by PCORI, where we're comparing two palliative care approaches for patients with end-stage liver disease. We have also registrars, and I work with Society of Thoracic Surgeons and American College of Cardiology TVT Registry. This is a national database that tracks the safety and effectiveness of transcatheter valve replacement and repair procedures. So we have most of the procedures performed in the U.S. in this registry.
And we are grateful for all of your service to the committee. You've led with distinction. And we are truly international and very grateful that the 2024 Educational Ambassador could join us today. So, Paolo, tell us about your day job.
Hi, everyone. I'd like to thank Don and Ron for the very kind invitation for this edition of the Practical Significance podcast. My name is Paolo Canas Rodrigues, and I'm a professor of statistics and data science at the Federal University of Bahia in Brazil. I also lead here the Statistical Learning Laboratory, where I coordinate teaching, research, and outreach activities in the interface between statistics, machine learning, and artificial intelligence. Among other activities, I also serve as the president of the International Society for Business and Industrial Statistics and president-elect of the International Association for Statistical Computing.
Thanks, Paolo. Don and I are very grateful to have the chance to chat with the three of you. So, Carolina, as a member of this committee, the Committee on International Relations and Statistics, describe for us, please, your perspective on what the Educational Ambassador Program is.
I'm excited to talk about it. It's a wonderful ASA initiative where scholars from various countries are sponsored to attend the joint statistical meetings and take continuing education courses on emerging topics in statistics. Then they are expected to return home and teach what they learn. The minimum requirement is to offer the equivalent of a one-course graduate level course, one semester graduate level course, with no less than 10 people. But many ambassadors go far beyond that, and they organize courses and webinars that reach audiences across their country and even multiple countries. It dates back to 2005. And at that time, the first educational ambassador was chosen. She was from Argentina. And that's kind of exciting because it means it's the 20th anniversary of the program, right? So it's very fitting that we're having this podcast today. So the ambassadors are selected through a competitive process, and the goal of this process is to maximize the impact of the award. And we typically focus on countries where access to the kinds of advanced statistical training at JSM may be more limited. Over the years, we had several countries represented, including Brazil, Indonesia, Mexico, Pakistan, Namibia, Nigeria, Costa Rica, and many more. And it's administered by the Committee on International Relations and Statistics. And as a last thought, I'd like to say it's an extremely impactful initiative that fosters the exchange of knowledge. And it also fosters international collaboration, as we're seeing today, having Paolo here with us.
Thanks, Carolina. So, Paolo, it's an extra pleasure for me to get to talk to you because we met many years ago at an ISBIS meeting, as I recall, and it's been great to stay in contact with you over the years. And so now we want to talk to you in your capacity as a former educational ambassador. How would you describe the program?
Thank you. Yes, indeed, Ron. We met in Slovenia, I think, if I remember. Well, it was in Potros. And I'd like to thank you for all your support along the time. This is a great program. I got to know it by chance because I had become a member of the American Statistical Association not so long before I got one of the newsletters with that information where I decided to apply. And I think this program is a very special and prestigious opportunity, especially for people that live and work in developing countries. One of the key things is to attend the JSM, but it's not just about attending one of the major conferences in our field of study. It's also about learning, connecting, and sharing. This gives a very nice opportunity for people which are coming from underrepresented countries to take a chance and attend one of the large gatherings of statisticians from all around the world. I truly support early career colleagues and people, researchers from developing countries. So I truly support and admire this initiative. In my case, I attended the JSM 2024 in Portland, and I took two courses, one on text analysis and another on large language models. I decided to choose these two because it's a field that I want to grow in, and they were really very nice learning and networking experiences. And of course, I come back with a lot of ideas and resources that I have been trying to apply and to share. And I think what makes the program even more meaningful is that the idea, as it was just mentioned by Carolina, is that you bring this information back home. So the idea is that in the year after, you one of the duties is to try to make some local impact based on what you learn. And I think that this really helps to create a more meaningful impact. So I think that's the main thing of the program itself.
So Andres, we'll turn to you. You led the committee last year, and so have a good sense of what makes an ideal candidate. Could you talk a little bit about what qualities you look for in a candidate for the Educational Ambassador Program beyond the academic and professional credentials?
I want to stress that we opened the applicant pool beyond strictly requiring a doctoral degree in a statistical field as it used to be in way back. And now we ask the applicants to just hold a postgraduate degree. And the reason for that is to allow for better potential compatibility with possibly in a varied environment, academic environment around the world in different countries. Although PhD would be still preferred, but now coming beyond academic credential, I think it's very important that candidate is involved in teaching and dissemination of statistical methods knowledge even now at their position in at a recognized university or research organization. Why is that important? I think because this is a natural pathway to share and spread the knowledge, as we just heard from Paolo, from ideas, concepts acquired by attending continuing education courses at GSM, at simply from participating at joint statistical meetings. So this teaching involvement, I think, is very important. In addition, we are looking for applicants who are going to keep in touch with us and may be willing to join potential future initiatives originating from a committee, our committee, or RSA in general, For example, we are hoping to initiate a ASA International Data Quest experience for students this year. And this way, a collaboration with past education ambassadors can be very valuable. So keeping in touch and being engaged is important also.
Thanks for that. So Paolo, I want to come back to you for a moment to follow up on your experiences as the educational ambassador. You talked about, and I love this phrase, you talked about learning, connecting, and sharing. So when you went back home, you went with ideas that you picked up from the short courses that you attended. Can you talk a little bit about some things that you did or things that you might follow up on back home?
Yes, absolutely. Well, in fact, I did not come back home. I was on a sabbatical leave in 2024. So I went back to Indonesia. And during that rest of 2024, I gave a couple of talks and I gave half of a course there related with text analysis and large language models. And I also had the chance, I'm teaching 1 month per year in Cameroon. And I also gave some talks there on this field. So going back to what I mentioned before, the continuing education course that I took at the JSM were exactly on text analysis for statisticians and large language models and transformers. And then I came back to Brazil in early 2025. And here I launched a new master and PhD level course. I called it Large Language Models, Foundations and Inference. And this is a course for our graduate program in statistics and data science. So this course combines both theoretical and practical components, and it covers topics such as embedding, attention mechanisms, and statistical inference for large language models. So my plan is to offer this course annually. Another thing that I start is to organize some seminars slash webinars on generative artificial intelligence. And this idea is to feature international speakers. And I organized already a few of them. And one of the guests was actually one of the lecturers that I met in Portland that gave one of the courses that I attend. So the idea is to try to share as much as possible across especially Latin America and Africa. I have also tried to involve the undergrad and graduate students in doing some research on this direction in large language models and generative AI, because I think this is the direction, either we like it or not, that will be the direction anyway. So I think this chance of attending JSM 2024 and being the educational ambassador, it gave me just not a personal boost for myself on this new direction, but also for my students and a broader academic network. And the idea is that I try to reach diverse audiences in different countries.
That's terrific, Paolo. Thanks.
That's amazing. And it really sets up this next question, which is, we'd love to have the three of you reflect on how you define success. And Carolina, I'll start with you because I should have acknowledged that you also led the committee as chair and were really responsible for starting some new initiatives as well. But at the beginning, you gave us the rich history of the Educational Ambassador Program, which is certainly a measure of success. But what else would you like our audience to know in terms of the successes of the program?
One thing I'd like to say is that Paolo is a great example of the success of the program, with the impact that went beyond his home country to various other countries. And in fact, I think that Paolo's example exemplifies what I would say is a success. And there are two aspects of it. One is bringing new educational opportunities to places where they may not have existed otherwise. And we saw a lot of that with Paolo's experiences. But there's a second really important aspect, and that's relationship building. So the ASA is enriched by bringing in voices and perspectives from around the world. And as we've already kind of mentioned, we often stay in touch with our educational ambassador for years after they were active with us. In fact, I could give a couple of examples. One of our past ambassadors from Nigeria helped establish the first ASA student chapter in Africa. That was very exciting. Students and universities across the country. There's another cool example. During the pandemic, many education ambassadors spoke about how their countries were affected by the pandemic and how they adapted to the challenges that were brought about. And this resulted in a very interesting article in Amstat News written by the Committee on International Relations and Statistics, which was really interesting because we wanted to hear how are other countries experiencing this. So those are just some examples of how this program can have great impact that lasts well beyond what the program does in terms of offering a course in another country.
Thanks very much. And Paolo, I'll come to you as you reflect on your time at JSM and your time as the educational ambassador. Is there anything else that you would like to highlight in terms of successes of the program?
Yes, of course. I think it's not just going, as I mentioned, to the JSM, because that's just going for a conference. I think the lasting impact that can be is that it can be done via classroom training or research or professional networks. And of course, if the knowledge that we gain from the JSM becomes a new course or a new collaboration or some mentoring of students or some other outreach activities, of course, I think that that's already a great achievement. I also think that success is maybe a bit more than that, and that's the focus from what I understand of the committee, is that the idea is to try to help statisticians generally from the global south to gain more visibility, because you see, sometimes people from certain regions, they don't have the will or the knowledge. Some people are shy to take leadership roles, and I think this can help on that, on try to motivate people to get involved and to take more leadership roles in the international statistical community. And something that I thought when I was thinking about this podcast is that I think it is partially done already, but maybe we could try to have, for instance, a yearly meeting, all the previous educational ambassadors, to have some kind of brainstorm, to discuss ideas, to discuss projects that have been done or that can be done. And this could even result in a news article for the ASA newsletter that can bring more attention to this program, because maybe many of our colleagues are not fully aware of this program. And I think it is a really important one to share. So I think that could be a nice idea to try to advertise it.
Paolo, I think that's a fantastic idea, and I will put on my Chance magazine hat and say that it would be lovely to have a special issue of Chance magazine focus on the educational ambassadors and all of the amazing things that you and others have done. Let's make that happen for sure. And Andreas, what's your perspective on how to evaluate the success of the educational ambassador program?
I think the success of a program happens indeed when dissemination of knowledge happens. And Paolo, clearly, it's a wonderful example of that. Another part of it is the program is successful if it leads to an ever-expanding circle of statistical thinking and connections around the world. And again, that's really the goal of what we're trying to achieve. I would hope that educational ambassadors will keep in touch. But indeed, just what Paolo mentioned, we already have a thought and planned to organize in the fall a conference call with available past educational ambassadors so they can share their current work or teaching methods. So this concept of keeping in touch and developing further connections and helping each other, it's very much part of this program and ultimately success of the program.
Thank you for all those responses. And hopefully someone is listening to this podcast who wants to be an educational ambassador or knows someone who should apply to be the educational ambassador. So I'm going to ask each of you in turn to offer a few suggestions for someone who is preparing an application for the program. And Paolo, since you prepared an application for the program, let's start with you, and then we'll go to the other colleagues who have been on the other end of reviewing those applications. So Paolo, what are some tips for someone to apply for this program?
Thanks, Ron. Apparently, I did something right. So it was successful. So I was thinking about that, and I have two main advices. I think one is an advice that I take with myself for life, not just for this, but to be honest and realistic on this proposal. It is important to try to describe in a clear and practical way how this knowledge will be shared after the GSM. It will be important to show that you have some ideas and some structure and some motivation to make it happen. It can be through teaching or organizing events or webinars or collaborations or something like that. The second advice is don't be afraid to show your passion. It is my understanding that the committee is looking for people who truly care about education and the development of statistics in different regions of the world. So I think it's important that the enthusiasm is shown in the proposal so that the committee members that are making the selection can understand that you are passionate about education and about sharing knowledge and so on. So those are my two suggestions.
Thanks very much for those two practical and useful tips. So now, Andre, from your perspective, because you've evaluated candidates, what are some tips for applying for the Educational Ambassador Program?
The first is a practical one. As always with applications, please apply early. You know, occasionally it happens, and it happened that, for example, a support letter does not come on time, and then unfortunately we cannot consider such an application. But emphasizing what Paolo mentioned, please be clear about your teaching environment. Explain also in a reasonable detail how you intend to share your knowledge in a year after you attend GSM as education ambassador. So some detail and clarity is helpful, not just general statements. And of course, a strong dose of enthusiasm in application is always impressive. And I'm glad that Paolo mentioned it also. So we all agree, at least from both sides, on that topic.
Okay, Carolina, what are your things that you'd like to add?
My advice is to make sure that every part of your application highlights the impact that your selection as an EA would have for your country, region, and beyond. Of course, you want to emphasize your own qualifications and to show you're well positioned to make the program successful, but we really care about impact as well. And so that's something you may want to emphasize, like when you're reaching many countries like Paolo did. Oh, that's one example. It doesn't have to be that's an example. And then just to be specific and concrete, I think that's similar to what Paolo and Andre said, provide a clear and concrete plan of how you will disseminate the knowledge you gain. Explain who will benefit, why there is a need for this training in your country or region, and how your proposal will address that need. So that would be my advice, just be concrete and obviously agree with the passion. That's something that you always want to have.
Thanks. That's great advice. And we'll let our audience know that in the show notes, we'll have a link to the committee's website where they can see all the deadlines that are required for the application and how to submit. So we have a tradition on practical significance to ask our guests to share what they're reading, what they're listening to. We're actually open to suggestions of other podcasts. So, Paolo, I'll start with you. In what little free time you have, what are you reading, watching, or listening to, or all of the above?
That's a great question. Thanks, Donna. Well, to be honest, I don't usually read too much outside work, since I already read it too much for teaching and for research. But recently, I read a book that I enjoyed, which was Start With Why, by Simon Sinek. It is a great reminder on how purpose can guide leadership and communication. In terms of movies and cinema, I watched this last weekend a movie called Straw with Taraji Erson. This is a very strong and emotional story about a woman who faces too much in just one day. And it shows how a person's life can fall apart when there is no one to help. It made me think a lot about empathy, about survival, and how people can struggle in the day-to-day lives. I tried to connect with this because if we have strong networks, and this is surely what this Educational Ambassador Program tries to motivate, that can minimize, at least in some direction of life. In terms of music, well, I'm Portuguese. I live in Brazil, so I have to connect the two cultures. Of course, I recommend the Portuguese Fado music. I don't know if you know about it. If you don't, try to look for it. Fado, F-A-D-O. It is a very emotional music. They have great artists like Marisa and Carlos do Carmo. And of course, the Brazilian MPB, which probably most of you know about, Caetano Veloso, Gilberto Gil, Maria Bethânia. These are ideas to keep on your playlist for sure.
I really appreciate that. I will definitely add those to a playlist. So, Andreas, what about you? Reading, watching, listening to, all of the above.
Well, I also wish I read more, but somehow I find myself reading less than I used to, but could be that being busy, but also, what can I say, electronic access to news stories sometimes takes over. But to simply relax, sometimes I pick up my Agatha Christie stories, which is fun to read. However, often somewhere in the middle, I realize I already read them, but it's still fun. It's still fun. But more seriously, I would like to finish reading books and poems by Czesław Miłosz. He was a 1980 Nobel Prize in Literature laureate, who, after spending large part of his life in US as a professor at University of California, Berkeley, spent his last few years in Kraków, Poland, where I'm originally from. So that's my goal to complete. Recently, I watched the film Conclave, and I was indeed inspired. I have to say that many films with Paul Finis are truly impressive. As to listening, I can listen for hours to Leonard Cohen. I have all his CDs when such a thing was still useful. So that's my go-to listening artist.
Who knew that we shared a passion? I love Leonard Cohen. How great. That's wonderful. We'll have to exchange favorite songs. So, Carolina, what about you? Listening, watching, reading, all of the above?
Yeah, like the others, I wish I could say I read more than I do. I used to read a lot when I was younger. I used to love fiction. Now I'm often reading things that help me learn new skills. Usually have nothing to do with statistics. Like, one of my passions is photography, and I'm often reading books about techniques. In terms of watching, I recently started a show called The Bear. I don't know if you know it. It's about the restaurant industry, and it's really about human relationships. It's very intense, but also super interesting. I'm only in season 3, so if you've seen it, no spoilers, please. And music, I like all kinds of things, from classic to jazz to modern music. I really enjoy music in general.
I'm behind you in The Bear, but I understand that the new season is actually very good. So we both have to catch up. Well, this has been great. We are so appreciative that all of you took time to talk with us about the Educational Ambassador Program, and I'm absolutely positive that it will motivate folks to apply. So we have a final tradition for practical significance, and that is Ron's top 10. So I will turn it over to my colleague, Ron, to share his top 10.
Thank you, Donna. We're always amused here at the Practical Significance podcast at how versatile statistical and data science terms are. For example, it occurred to us that many terms sound like they could be used by professional wrestlers. So here is a list of the top 10 statistical terms that could be the names of professional wrestlers. And for those not into wrestling terminology, a face is the good guy and a heel is the villain. Okay, number 10. Gradient Descent Guerrero, a face who systematically finds the optimal path to pin his opponent. Number 9, Hector Heteroscedasticity, a heel whose style becomes more erratic as the match progresses. Number 8, Bootstrap Bill McTavish, a scrappy underdog who pulls himself up and keeps coming back for more. Hamish the Hyperparameter, an obsessive heel who spends more time adjusting his gear and entrance music than actually wrestling. Number 6, the unsupervised learner. This dangerous heel is a loose cannon who refuses coaching and develops his own bizarre, unpredictable fighting style that somehow still works. Number 5, Killer Komolgorov. Known for his horrible fake Russian accent, this heel's wrestling style exhibits a high degree of complexity. Number 4, Robust Regression Roman. This tough-as-nails face can handle any opponent and isn't thrown off by cheap shots. Number 3, Causal Collider. Influenced by both villains and heroes, the Collider is famous for his inverted fork move. Number 2, the Confounding Variable. The ultimate villain who shows up unexpectedly and ruins the match. And the number 1 statistical term that could be the name of a professional wrestler, Max Likelihood. Beloved for his reliability, This fan favorite always finds the most probable way to win. Well, that's it for this episode of Practical Significance. We look forward to continuing the conversation next month.
Thank you for listening to this edition of Practical Significance, the podcast of the American Statistical Association. A new episode will be coming your way next month from AmStat News, the ASA's monthly membership magazine.